Draft podcast. I am your host, Corey Kennan, and I'm solo potting tonight. So this is some fun. I haven't done this in quite some time here. So going to knock out this solo pod here fast. And again, today we're just going to be talking about week nine implications from an NFL draft perspective. So, you know, if you missed out on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night games, don't worry. You didn't miss out on too much. If you're not listening to this till Friday evening, don't worry. There's not much going on Friday night either. So not too much to worry about there, but we will jump into the Saturday slate. Before we do, I just want to pitch a couple more things as well. If you're not subscribed to the Substack, please subscribe to Dapt on Draft, the Substack, daptondraft.football there. Again, just a free sub gets you a link into my Discord server as well. Guys are always talking ball in there. You know, there's College Game Day network or channels. There's NFL Game Day channels, fantasy football channels, scouting report channels, all sorts of kind of cool stuff in there as well. Any new article gets blasted out in there, things like that. So it's a good community. A lot of guys talking ball in there. So again, if you want an invite to that Discord server, just a free sub, it'll be in that welcome email. Again, a paid sub for the Substack gets you access to all of my content. The Discord server has an insider info channel in there as well, where anything I hear from scouts that I think is pertinent, I'll throw in there. And then again, access to all written and video content that I do on the Substack for a paid subscription as well. $80 for the year or $8 a month. So just a quick little pitch there before we dive into this thing. But we're going to go ahead and start with the Saturday games. Again, not much to talk about Friday. There's Cal, Virginia Tech, but that's about it there. Big noon kickoff here. We got Indiana, UCLA, and UCLA is riding a high here. So, you know, this could be a potential trap game for Indiana. But again, we want to see Fernando Mendoza continue to do Fernando Mendoza things. A guy that I've had at quarterback one since frickin' April. And it's paying off for me here. So we'll see how that adds up there. Again, not a lot of NFL draft talent to talk about on the UCLA side. But again, for Indiana, we've got Fernando Mendoza. We've got the wide receiver duo of Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper. Defensively, we have D'Angelo Pons, Amari Farrell at corner and safety, respectively, there. I've mentioned on the podcast as well that Aiden Fisher is moving me a little bit at the second level of that defense as well, playing his heart out. So that's a close one to keep an eye on as well. All right, let's move on to Ole Miss, Oklahoma here. We're going to skip over Syracuse, Georgia Tech. Again, Syracuse, I think Jontae Cook is playing pretty well, but I think he's going to go back to school no matter what, and there's some questions there about, you know, his bounce from Texas to Washington to Syracuse all in one offseason. So I don't think he's going to declare, even though he is stacking some decent games. He's got 37 catches for 456 and two touchdowns this year for the Orange, but and Keelan Rutledge is a guard for Georgia Tech that's worth keeping an eye on as well. But moving on to Ole Miss, Oklahoma, the battle of two kind of wiry quarterbacks here, right? And Trinidad Chambliss and John Mateer. Chambliss, I had some love for, and then it's been a little rough the past couple weeks, but I do think there's a decent floor there as a backup, and he's got some nice tools to work with. The John Mateer hype train seems to have slowed down, and I think that's probably for the best. Again, going back to his Washington State tape, I did a film room on him over the summer where it's like, man, I don't 100% trust his eyes. And then coming this season to Oklahoma, it's kind of been more of the same, right? He's a really fun prospect, really toolsy prospect, but like, he's still a little wiry in the pocket with his feet, and he's still a little iffy with where his eyes are going and some of the decisions that he's making. So that's the meat and potatoes of playing the quarterback position, and I think that's still a little bit lacking for John Mateer. But again, that report will write itself. If he wants to come out, he's got to stack some games here, coming out strong here. And you know, the Texas one's going to leave a bad taste in the mouth of evaluators. But if he comes out and he lights up the rest of the SEC here, we might be having some conversations. Again, for Ole Miss, there is a left tackle, Diego Pounds, who I have said is the most frustrating player in this entire draft class from my perspective, because he looks the part and he moves like a really smooth athlete, and the rest of it just isn't there. Offensively as well, they've got some weapons. I really like Daquan Wright, the tight end, for Ole Miss as well. defensively for Oklahoma, they're loaded. They've got Grayson Holton up front, who's having a strong season at defensive tackle, even as a rotational guy. They've got a lot of underclassmen, two underclassmen that are we're going to be talking a lot about next year, in Jaquan Jackson and David Stone. I butchered the first guy's name, but you know who I'm talking about. And Holton's still coming in on a rotational basis, and he's playing well. Eli Bowen, who knows if he's going to declare, but that's a name that could be worth keeping an eye on in that Oklahoma secondary. Deion Burks at wide receiver as well. He's a good little slot receiver there. And I thought he's even doing some nice stuff at Z, winning with actual routes vertically and not just gadget nonsense. And so Deion Burks is going to be worth keeping an eye on as well. Let's skip down to, oh boy, we're hitting a rough patch here. We've got like Virginia, North Carolina, South Florida, Memphis. South Florida, Memphis will be a fun American game. From an NFL draft perspective, not so much. And then we got like Northwestern, Nebraska, Rutgers, Purdue. I can't, you know, there's not a lot of NFL draft hopefuls to talk about in that regard. SMU Wake Forest. We can talk a little bit about some defensive tackles here. The Mateen kid from Wake Forest playing defensive tackle has some love out there in the industry. Athletic dude who's pretty flexible for his size. SMU as well. I shouted out Cameron Robertson this week. A good base end. I don't think there's a lot of pass rush upside there, but if we're talking about a day three strong edge setter, I like him. Damon Claiborne, Wake Forest West running back, is probably the player that's going to have the most NFL draft hype. Falele Faome, the offensive tackle, also has some hype as well. All right, moving down a little bit more here. We'll get to Auburn, Arkansas here. The matchup I'll be watching pretty closely in this one will be Quincy Rhodes versus Xavier Chaplin. Again, we're getting close to the curtain calls for both those guys in terms of, like, are you going to be 2026 prospects or 2027 prospects? So again, I think Quincy Rhodes, the ceiling is extraordinarily high, but his past few games have been uneventful and not high impact, have been pretty low impact. So keeping an eye there. There's some Taylen Green love out there as well from the community. To me, I don't necessarily see it. Doesn't have as nearly as big an arm as people tend to say he does. He is fun with his legs like that. That's for sure there. But I think he's pretty like routinely late to get the football out. And again, doesn't really have the arm to compensate in those windows. For Auburn, Eric Singleton hasn't gotten out of that gadget mold, hasn't really broken out of that. And his draft stock is kind of sinking as a result. Again, I wouldn't be shocked if maybe he gets back in the portal this next season. Auburn might have quite a few people dip back. I mean, they're 0-4 in SEC play. So, and Arkansas is 0-3 in SEC play. Arkansas guard Fernando Carmona is a player that I've been high on since he was a left tackle at San Jose State. Had kind of a down year playing left tackle at Arkansas last year, has kicked inside to guard this year, playing a little bit better. Definitely a draftable prospect there as well. So some decent names to watch out for in that game. Obviously Keldrick Folk as well along the defensive line for Auburn to keep an eye on. All right, Alabama, South Carolina. I mean, this is it for Lenora Sellers, right? We two games ago were like, okay, he's entering this 5-game gauntlet. We've talked a lot about Sellers, James and I have, and I don't mean to keep harping on the kid because he's 20 years old, right? There's literally no pressure on him to declare this year, none. But coming into the season with all the hype that he did, we're now into game three, so this will hit 60% of this 5-game stretch that we've been hyping up, and the first two games haven't been great. LSU and I cannot think of who they played last week. LSU and Oklahoma. Oklahoma is who they played last week. Hasn't looked great for Sellers. Again, I think two things are true with Sellers, right? One, he's extremely hard to evaluate behind that offensive line. And I honestly don't think he's got the weapons with the play caller as well at South Carolina. But I think secondly, you can also say that like, yes, but like there are some times where he's double clutching and he's hitching. And why isn't the ball coming out on time? And why is he trying to break out of every sack and ends up taking a 12-yard sack instead of a 4-yard loss? Like, why are we doing all of these things? Again, South Carolina sitting at 1-4 in SEC play. And so I think both of those things can be true. And if I believe that both of those things are true, then what I'm going to say is that like Sellers probably needs to go back to school and transfer. On the opposite end here, we've got Ty Simpson in Alabama, who's playing lights out. Probably a Heisman front runner up there with Fernando Mendoza, Dante Moore, guys like that. Sitting with 1,900 passing yards, 18 touchdowns to one interception this season. Again, a relentless middle of the field thrower. I think he's been every bit of what people thought Garrett Nussmeier would be this year. Looks like a first round pick to me, man. Like this guy looks like a top quarterback in this class to me. And we'll see if he can keep it going against South Carolina, who's got a formidable front four. And that's going to be good news for Caden Proctor, who needs to stack another game here. He had a great game against Tennessee. Really, that's the first game that I've thought like he's played up to the billing of who we thought Caden Proctor was coming into the season. Even like the Vanderbilt game and the Missouri game that people were like, yeah, they are improvements because the floor was so low in those early games. But I still thought he was giving up quite a bit of stuff through the chest in those games. But Tennessee tape was good. If he can stack it again here against Dylan Stewart and those guys for South Carolina, then we might be cooking with gas a little bit with Proctor again, getting back into those conversations of one of the best tackles in a really bad tackle class, man. I can't reiterate enough how disappointing of a tackle class this is. Again, for Alabama, the wide receiver duo of draft eligible guys there with Jeremy Bernard and Isaiah Horton. I like both those guys. Again, Horton doesn't get targets because they don't have enough. They've got too many mouths to feed, but I like both those guys, and Bernard fits the mold of receiver that's kind of thriving at the NFL right now. The Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jackson Smith and Jigba kind of guys. You know, James mentioned him as a potential power slot. One of those guys like Puka Nacua that is breaking out from predominantly just dominating over the middle of the field and being able to play through contact at a high level. So I'm pretty bullish on Bernard and his fit at the NFL level as well. And James and I have talked about ad nauseum how this Alabama defense just isn't impactful, and even guys like LT Overton aren't having good years and have a pretty unique and weird NFL draft profile, and it's one that I tend to shy away from. So we'll see what happens there. Missouri Vanderbilt. Jordan White, the center for Vanderbilt, is playing good football. Again, probably still a day three pick, but he is playing good football. And Chris McClellan's a defensive tackle that I liked when he was at Florida. He's kind of fallen off my radar a little bit, but Missouri does have Zion Young and Damon Wilson coming off the edge as well in this game as well. Zion Young is coming off of a very stellar game in that overtime win last week. So keeping an eye there on Zion Young. Offensively, they have Kevin Coleman worth keeping an eye on. And then Eli Stowers is really the one Vanderbilt guy to keep a close eye on outside of Jordan White as well. But Eli Stowers has had a really disappointing year, especially based on what people thought the expectations of Eli Stowers would be this season. Like I had scouts telling me this guy's going to run a 4.4 and leap 40 inches. And he still might do that stuff at the combine, and that might boost his stock because tight end is the one position where you could have no production. But if you go and test well, like you're almost locking yourself into day two. Like, we saw it with Tip Ryman at Illinois, had no production, tested off the charts, and got drafted in the third round by the Cardinals. So, like, all of these things can be true, but the production is a little bit on the disappointing end. BYU, Iowa State. Man, I don't much love what's going on at Iowa State. I don't really like any of those guys. There's not a single draft prospect I can name you off the top of my head. Jontez Williams, but he's suffered a season-ending injury, so he's not playing. For BYU, the left tackle Jad is a really good athlete. A lot of deficiencies, but if you're taking a day three shot on an athlete, the Jad kid playing left tackle for BYU is one of those players who sits at 11 in the nation right now, 4-0 in Big 12. Again, the Big 12 has been cannibalizing each other. So if you told me Iowa State won this game, I wouldn't be shocked. Actually, Iowa State's a 2.5-point favorite in this game playing at home. I think my favorite BYU prospect is probably running back LJ Martin, though. Tough dude to bring down. Not overly explosive long speed-wise, but has really good eyes, really good patience, and then the contact balance is there. So I like LJ Martin quite a bit. Isaiah Glasker, linebacker for BYU, also has a bit of NFL draft hype, too. So those are the guys to keep an eye on there. Washington, Illinois. JC Davis hasn't had a great year. So we'll keep a close eye there, but I think the guy to watch on this one's obviously running back Jonah Coleman, who has every bit of a right to the title of running back two in this class as anybody. nobody's really separated themselves outside of Jeremiah Love. And so that race is wide open, and it very well could be Coleman, a fourth-year senior. Arizona transfer, came over with Jed Fish to Washington from Arizona. Denzel Boston as well is a name to watch for Washington, too. Denzel Boston is interesting. He's not a high-end athlete. He's a big-body dude. He is a little more refined as a route runner than a guy like Keon Coleman. So, like, I'm hesitant because I don't want to get caught in the Keon Coleman trap again, but I do think there's a little bit more refinement there than Coleman had. Still a little hesitant overall on Denzel Boston's profile, but keeping an eye on Boston as well in this game. Minnesota, Iowa. Again, Minnesota's got the edge, Anthony Smith to keep an eye on, and James and I have talked a lot about Cade Piper, the right guard for Iowa. Jennings Dunkard continues to get NFL draft type, and I think it's because his name is Jennings Dunkard and he has tattoos and a red mullet that people are like, yeah, this guy rules. I think he's a day three player. Anthony Smith predominantly comes off the left side, so we might not see any one-on-ones there, but if Anthony Smith does come off that other side, I'll be quite interested to see how that pans out for both players there as well. All right. South Carolina State, or it's not South Carolina State, San Diego State playing Fresno State. Really just want to shout out Chris Johnson, cornerback Chris Johnson. James and I have talked about him. I've done a film room on him on my Substack. So again, if you are a paid subscriber, you can go watch that film breakdown against him when they played Cal and they blew the doors off of Cal, which was a really impressive win to come up against P4 competition and a P4 team that's 5-2 on the season. And just blow the doors off of them. They beat them 30-0 in that game. So Chris Johnson, Dane Brugler shouted him out in an article today too. So a fringe day two, day three player at corner for San Diego State right there. All right, that's going to take us all the way down to Oklahoma State to Texas and Texas Tech. Again, Oklahoma State's not a very good football team, and by not a very good football team, they're an abysmal football team. They're 1-6, 0-4 in Big 12 play. Mike Gundy got fired. Everybody's beating the brakes off of Oklahoma State. Texas Tech should do the same, and they need to bounce to have a bounce back after losing to Arizona State last week. And I know Baron Morton was hurt and didn't play, and Will Hammond did start that game, and maybe the odds would have been different if Morton was under center. So from a Texas Tech perspective, there is Morton. There is Coy Eakin as well, the wide receiver for Texas Tech that I like. Terrence Carter, tight end for Texas Tech, is getting a lot of hype from scouts. And I haven't seen it hit mainstream yet. But Terrence Carter is getting a lot of hype from scouts. And so that's a name that I'm going to be watching again closely in this game. The production over the last two has kind of fallen off a little bit. But again, Morton has been hurt for the last six quarters. So that's probably contributing to that as well. Man, solo potting is hard. Solo potting is hard. I need to take a drink. Defensively for Texas Tech, this is where the meat and potatoes for them are as well. David Bailey, Romello Height are two of the most successful pass rushers in the nation this year from a pass rush win rate standpoint. David Bailey has had 11 pressures in his last two games, so 22 combined in his last two games, which is just ridiculous. If you can get past the fact that he can't play against the run and you just want to draft a high-end pass rushers, like somebody might take him first round as a DPR. If they can look past that and say, well, like, that's fine, we'll just play him on obvious passing situations and let him pin his ears back and let one of the better reactive athletes that I've ever seen just get after it. I really like Jacob Rodriguez, and I know James shouted him out last week too, the middle linebacker for Texas Tech as well. I think he's really instinctive, really reactive, undersized, probably an underwhelming athlete, but if there's a position that you can take an undersized, underwhelmed athlete at with good eyes, it's running back and it's linebacker. So, like, if he's refined and you know what he's looking at, I could deal with Jacob Rodriguez still, despite the size deficiencies there. So that's what we're going to talk about there with Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. All right. Baylor Cincinnati. I really want to talk about this one because the more I sit on the Sorsby stuff, the higher I get on Sorsby. You know, I did a film room on him this week on the Substack. I've talked a lot about Sorsby on this podcast. I gave him a helmet sticker on our Monday episode. And then I wrote up a scouting report on Drew Aller today. You know, I wrote his final report since he's out for the season, and then this is it's going to be it, what it is with Drew Aller. And then I was looking up some advanced data on PFF. Again, I don't like PFF's grades, but I like the other peripheral data, which is honestly the primary stuff. And I was just filtering by like under pressure time to throw, under pressure turnover worthy plays, under pressure big time throws, under pressure this, that. Brennan Sorsby at the top of all of them. It's easy to fall in love with the tools. The accuracy needs to stabilize, and it has a little bit. And again, Baylor's defense is awful. It's been awful. So Cincinnati should have another big day offensively here, but I'm dead serious. Like, come back to me in 2 weeks after this Baylor game. And then again, he's got Arizona, Utah, TCU, BYU down the stretch here. So they've got the meat of their Big 12 schedule too, but come back to me in 2 weeks, man. And I think that we might be talking, like having a pretty serious conversation about Sorsby, including mocking him as maybe that fourth quarterback off the board in even in the first round. That's how good I think he's been. Go watch the pocket movement stuff. He's not turning the ball over. He's playing really well under pressure. He's a great athlete with his legs. The arm is whip-like. There's multiple arm slots he can throw from. So the more I sit on the Sorsby stuff, the more I'm talking myself into him. So definitely going to watch that one for sure. All right. Texas, Mississippi State. The Bulldogs don't have anybody that I'm going to sit here and talk about. My favorite player on that team is Fluff Bothwell, who's their running back, transferred from South Alabama, who is just a hoss, a big boy, tough to bring down. So I'll be talking about him a lot next year. But and then from Texas as well, it's been a pretty disappointing season all around for them as well. But I will point out Jelani McDonald again. Jelani McDonald, the safety for Texas, has looked like the best player in that defense for two straight weeks to me. Again, outside of maybe Colin Simmons, who's not even draft eligible, right? So I will have another close eye on Jelani McDonald in this game to kind of see if he does again. And again, Mississippi State and Jeff Lebby, they're a straight up raid offense. They're going to pull that secondary sideline to sideline, cover every blade of grass. And that's going to put a guy like McDonald in a lot of conflict. So how does he handle that? So that's what I'll be really excited to keep an eye on as well. And CJ Baxter is probable in this game. Now, is Baxter going to declare this year after missing a lot of the season? Probably not, unless he just comes back and he blows the doors off of it production-wise. A guy that I came really high in the season on, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. TCU West Virginia. This is the Josh Hoover thing again. Eric McAllister is also playing really well. I think athletically, McAllister might be a little bit limited to an early day three player, maybe late day two. But he's had a really productive year. He even had over 200 yards receiving in a game this year for TCU. But Josh Hoover right now is sitting at my QB5. QB6, if we're not automatically just saying Sellers is going back to school. Right now, in the back of my mind, I'm operating like Sellers is going to go back to school because that's kind of how it's looked. Hoover's a little bit undersized, but he's got a live arm. He's got good athleticism, and he's playing really decisive and really aggressive over the middle of the field. And those are the kinds of things that I love to see from a quarterback. So I'm buying in on Hoover. Again, he's only 6 foot tall. I had a scout tell me the first time that he went out to TCU, he thought Hoover was the kicker. So from a body typing perspective, that's not great. And he is verified at under 6'1". So, and again, he's like verified under 6'1", but he's not as dense as Baker Mayfield. Like there are some quarterbacks who are surviving at 6 foot or shorter, but like not a lot. And the ones that are on the denser side. So we'll see, but I am liking what I'm seeing from Hoover. Again, he's coming off a game where he threw two picks against K-State too. So we got to maybe temper the expectations a little bit. Maybe he goes back to school for his redshirt senior season. We'll see what happens there. Wisconsin, Oregon, again, Dante Moore, right? Dante Moore, still my QB2 despite the Indiana game. I'm not moving off of him because of that. And he's got this nice stretch against Rutgers and Wisconsin now. It's like, these are where we need to see bounce backs. And we saw a great bounce back against Rutgers. Let's stack it again then. And then we're going into Iowa, and Iowa actually has a really solid defense that Fernando Mendoza even had some fits with a little bit there in that game. So just going to continue to see how Dante Moore stacks games. I have been told that Oregon's operating under the assumption that he's not coming back. So I've heard it from two different people now that, you know, one was from somebody in the building who said, I thought we'd have him for 2 years. And then from somebody else who's not in the building, but somebody else who's familiar with stuff that goes around there that says they're already potentially looking for quarterbacks to shop around in the portal this offseason. So it seems like they're preparing for Dante Moore to be a one and done as their starter. So keeping a really close eye there. Noah Whittington as well had a huge game last time out, and to the point where it's like, are we a little bit too low on him? Well, we had him lower than Mekhi Hughes coming into the season, and Mekhi Hughes has had to redshirt because he can't get touches from Whittington, Lamar, and De'Aaron Hill in that room. So I'm going to start noticing Whittington a little bit more, maybe a little bit more intently. Kenyon Sadiq had a Kenyon Sadiq game last week, and it was really the good to see him have a productive week because the production has been lacking despite being the consensus tight end one in a weak tight end class. So, defensively or still offensively for Oregon, again, Wisconsin doesn't have anybody on their defensive line that's really worth talking about, but Isaiah World coming off his best game of the season. Lalanu, the center, coming off a really strong game as well. So the left guard, Emmanuel Pregnon, is starting to get a lot of hype too. You know, once Brandon Thornton tweets about an offensive lineman, the hype's gonna skyrocket. So that happened with Pregnon. Man, I apologize. I'm fighting a cold too while solo potting, so this has been a lot of fun. Defensively, Mateo Uyangole, Amori Washington are the draws there. I really like Bryce Becker, the linebacker for Oregon, have for a little while. And then there's Dylan Thieneman, who I think has had a little bit of a rough season, but it's kind of turned around since the Penn State interception a little bit. But we'll see if Thieneman just ends up going back to school as well. Stanford, Miami. Stanford left tackle has got some Dane Brugler hype this week as well. So I haven't even checked out the Stanford left tackle. So that's going to be a player that I check out. As well, he's got his hands full with Akeem Mizidore and Reuben Bain in this one. So Reuben Bain's been playing like one of the best players in the country. Got slowed up a little bit last week against Louisville. We'll see what the bounce back looks like this week. Same with Carson Beck. Again, I'm never going to – well, I shouldn't say never because I have a tendency to do it. I fight the urge to be an I told you so guy, as bad as I am at it sometimes. But the Carson Beck stuff, man. Like, I tried to push as hard as I could to just tell people to, like, guys, the production is fine and that's great. And then, like, he's making $6 million a year this year. He's making $6 million this year at Miami. That's awesome. Let him be a fun college quarterback. But, like, when you see him throw the football, the velocity is clearly not there. Like, I'm trying to push back as much as I can. Like, yeah, this guy could probably be backup, but he's got to kind of rebuild that floor a little bit now. Like, he was playing, like, yeah, this guy's got a high floor. Now it's like, where is the floor on this guy? Because he reverted to a lot of the same mistakes he was making at Georgia last year. That got him kind of cast out from there as well. So keeping an eye on that, CJ Daniels, wide receiver for Miami, has had a really strong year in his sixth year. Mark Fletcher as well is a back that I would love in my room as a rotational guy. Like, I still think that he's a solid, like, committee back as that big body dude as well. And then CeCe Moyinoa has been the most steady offensive lineman in college football this year. It's been a bad offensive line year. Let's just call it what it is. But Moyinoa has been that stabilizing force throughout. I do think that he kicks like a guard. He kind of moves like a guard to me, but he does have that brute strength, that core strength, that punch, and that dense lower half, where, like, that anchor where I'm saying, like, yeah, it's still tough to beat him. But I do think that we're in the guard kind of conversation with him. I'm probably going to hang out there for a little while. Texas A&M, LSU. That LSU defense has been playing really well. We'll see if they keep it up. Texas A&M looks like a title contender. If Marcel Reed can kind of keep this up, we'll see if LSU has the secondary stallions to keep up with Craver and Concepcion. Concepcion looks like a first rounder. I mean, this wide receiver class, we talked about five or six guys who look like they could go first round. It's a really fun class at wide receiver. Again, we've talked a lot about A&M guard Chase Bezontis on this podcast, who we've talked about as a really good pass protector and then a pretty iffy run blocker. So a pretty formidable LSU defense to go against in this one too. So, you know, headlined by Whit Weeks in the middle. I'm not a huge Whit Weeks guy, but There is some hype for Whit Weeks there as well. AJ Holsey, the safety, is kind of the guy that James and I find ourselves talking most about, who's coming off a game with like 11 tackles from the third level of that LSU defense. So, I've been a big fan of Braylon Moore, the center for LSU, Virginia Tech transfer. And he, you know, he's got Albert Regis and the big boys along that A&M defensive line this week. And then Cassius Howell is going to have a chance to have another big game because the LSU tackles are not great players right now. So we'll see if Cassius Howell can continue to just terrorize opposing quarterbacks. And then we got to talk about Nussmeier a little bit too, who just continues to look like a mid-round guy. Like that's another guy I came into the season saying like this, everything about this guy just tells me mid-round arm, very poor athleticism, mid-round pocket presence in response to pressure, mid-round accuracy, and it's kind of all been mid-round decision making, and it's all been kind of that same thing this year at LSU. So keeping an eye on that too. He had a really rough game against A&M last year, so we'll see if he treats this as kind of a revenge game. Man, I apologize. All right. Feels weird to skip over Michigan State, but outside of like Jayshon Barham, who's been playing really well as a full-time edge now, and maybe Justice Haynes, who missed last game, there's really not a lot to talk about here with Michigan State. Tennessee, Kentucky, again, not a soul on Kentucky worth talking about right now, but I'll continue to watch Chris Brazel, who's up to 39 catches for 602 yards and 7 touchdowns this year for LSU or for Tennessee out wide. Wendell Moe, the right guard that James and I have talked about as a day three guy in this class. And then Jonathan Joseph's on the opposite end. And then Colton Hood, the corner as well. Arian Carter, the middle linebacker, got a Dane Brugel shout out to today. So leads all of college football in tackles. So undersized, only listed at 6 foot tall. So, but again, as I said with Rodriguez, like linebacker is the position you can be undersized at if you know how to play, avoid blocks, beat blockers to the spot, and trigger quickly. Like you can overcome some stuff there. So, but all right, I think that's it. There's a couple of Big 12 games that I haven't hit on here, but not much to actually. Houston, Arizona State. I do want to shout out Amari Thomas, the Houston wide receiver, only a true junior UAB transfer, but looks like a dynamite athlete in a 6 foot, 205 pound frame as well. So runs with a really dense lower half, breaks through arm tackles at a high level. Really impressed me on his tape last week. I gave him a shout out in my 7-up. We'll see if he declares, but he does have a matchup against Keith Abney this week. And Keith Abney is another true junior that I've been really high on, coming into the season at corner for Arizona State. And he's been a gnat in coverage. Again, he triggers downhill really fast. He's a really awesome tackler coming downhill as well. So a really fluid athlete, was an inline national championship skater, in middle school and early high school. So, has flexible ankles, and it shows up on tape there a little bit there too. So that's the matchup to watch in that one. And then there's Colorado, Utah, but okay. Omarion Miller, if I want to shout some guys out here, Omarion Miller, Colorado seems to think he's coming back from what I've been told. But I think if he keeps stacking games, he might have a reason to declare and could be another one of those guys we talk about as a potential first rounder. And then the Utah tackles, obviously. We want to talk about John Henry Daly, the edge for Utah against Jordan Seaton, who's getting hyped next year. I'm not a huge Jordan Seaton fan, just based off of tape. I know the high five-star stuff. I get it. The tape is the tape, though. So John Henry Daly against Jordan Seaton, it would be a good matchup to watch there, even though Seaton isn't draft eligible. But that's all I got this week for this review of week 9 action. Again, I apologize. Thanks for fighting through the coughing and the water breaks with me. It's rough to sit here and talk for 35 minutes straight, but we pushed through. We have done it. We navigated the treacherous waters. Enjoy an awesome week of college football. James and I will be back next week to do helmet stickers and break it all down for you. So until next time, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.